It is time for the KDNK local newscast for this Friday morning, January 6th. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. The U.S. Office of Special Counsel says the Southern Ute Tribe threatened retaliation against a Bureau of Indian Affairs employee who claimed the tribe avoided environmental regulations for new oil and gas leases. For this week's news brief, KDNK's Amy Haddon-Marsh talks to Jonathan Romeo, environmental reporter for the Durango Herald, about the case.
Talk about why this BIA, Bureau of Indian Affairs employee, blew the whistle on the Southern Ute Tribe. What was going on?
So this special counsel report is made public in December, and it basically says that in 2011-2012, BIA's office in Ignacio was just sorely understaffed, and the tribe had undertaken most of its responsibilities, the big one being the drafting of oil and gas leases. So what happens is they hire a new staffer whose name in this report is redacted. And when he comes in, he starts finding all these inaccuracies in the oil and gas leases, some of which the report says ignores the National Environmental Policy Act. And so when he brings this up to a coworker and his supervisor, they agree that these issues seem serious and need to be addressed. The employee and his coworker present this information to the tribe, and their reaction is very hostile. The report says that some Southern youths take personal offense. They fear their reputation is damaged. And within a couple of days, the Southern Ute Tribal Council actually passes a motion that calls for the two employees' dismissal.
The Southern Ute Tribal Council called for these employees to be fired.
Yes, that's correct. And at first, the report says that the BIA supervisor is very reluctant to give in to the Southern Ute's demand and that they were just doing their job. And all the while this is happening, the Southern Utes are growing increasingly frustrated. They're sending their lobbyists to high-level officials in Washington, D.C., and eventually the BIA does remove the two employees. The coworker is sent to another office, but when the BIA and the employee who originally found the irregularities in the leases, when they can't agree on a reassignment location, they fire him in February 2013, and he files a complaint under the Whistleblower Protection Act. And that is where the special counsel stepped in and conducted their investigation. They found that the employee was wrongfully removed. And that employee eventually, this fall, was reinstated to another BIA office, paid a lump sum for back pay and for compensatory damages.
You know, at first glance, Jonathan Romeo, it appears as though the Southern Utes may have taken advantage of the fact that the Bureau of Indian Affairs wasn't really paying attention to the lease drafts. You write that the tribe inserted passages into the drafts that were beyond the BIA's scope of authority, and you just mentioned that some of what they did violated NEPA. But could this have been inadvertent?
Well, it does go a little deeper when we look into the relationship between the Southern Utes and the BIA. Just to add a little bit of context, the Southern Ute Reservation is just south of Durango. It's only about 1,000 square miles. The largest town is Ignacio, which by most standards is a very small town. There's only about 800 people that live there. And even that's a mix of tribal and non-tribal members. The tribe itself is comprised of just about 1,400 members, so again, relatively small in size. However, it just so happens that they sit on one of the largest producing deposits of coal bed methane and natural gas, what's known as the San Juan Basin. And the tribe, since the 1970s, when it developed its own energy company, has done just an amazing job of developing those resources. So during this time period of just outstanding production and wealth, tribal leaders were really forward-thinking and diversified their economy so that they weren't entirely subject to the booms and busts of oil and gas prices. They expanded their reach to about 14 states. They do offshore drilling in the Gulf Coast. They have real estate ventures, private equities. It's just a very diverse, well-run operation. And because it's a sovereign nation, we don't really know the full extent of their business, but you do see some estimates of their net worth. In 2010, High Country News estimated it was between $3.5 billion and $14 billion. So we're dealing with a lot of money, but we don't exactly have a way of putting that down because they are not subject to the same reporting standards as normal corporations. And of course, they're historically wary of speaking to the media. But it's definitely safe to say that the Southern Utes are generally considered one of the richest sovereign nations in the United States. And, you know, the other side of this is that when I first saw this report on December 15th, and I called the Southern Utes, they said they were not even aware of the investigation that had been going on and that none of the Southern Ute representatives involved and mentioned in this report were interviewed to get their side of it. So, I mean, later that day, they issued a statement that said they disagreed with the characterizations of the incident They took issue with the conclusions of the investigation and said that they asked for the two employees to be removed because they were incompetent at their jobs and in the process disrespected the tribes. And all this is really a part of a bigger situation that's tied into a massive breach of trust case that has been ongoing since 2013, where the Southern Ute and nine other tribes sued the United States government for mismanaging their funds, basically saying that the BIA's mismanagement has caused the tribe to lose millions in revenue. And in September of this year, that case was settled, with the U.S. paying the Southern Utes $126 million. And, you know, there is evidence of that. There's a February 2016 report from the Department of the Interior's Office of Inspector General that just goes into painstaking detail how the BIA was failing the tribe and its responsibilities. There are pictures of records piled 5 feet high along the walls of the BIA office. There's loose documents shoved into empty closets and desks. And the report just goes into great detail how the BIA was in complete disarray at this time, hiring staff that wasn't properly trained in oil and gas leasing, lacking even a concrete plan or guideline to help manage this stuff. So you can imagine the Southern Utes are more inclined to take it upon themselves. They're a very well-run operation. And as the tribe is quick to point out, that breach of trust case occurred during the same time frame when those two BIA employees were at the Ignacio office. And they say that those two employees had a major role in the mismanagement that resulted in that $126 million settlement. So it really leaves us with some questions that just have not been answered with any satisfaction.
The BIA, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and Native Nations have had a contentious relationship for decades, to say the least. Could this case have been influenced by that historical relationship? Do you think the Utes were just ready to blame the BIA, or did they really do something illegal?
It's truly a tough call. We're dealing with sovereign nations and their rights to privacy. We only get glimpses of their internal workings, and this is one of them. It's too hard to kind of draw conclusions. The Southern Utes did issue in a statement that since the two employees were removed, that they were able to vastly improve relations with the BIA. But of course, there is this question, were environmental regulations truly ignored, and what are the impacts of those oil and gas wells? The BIA gave me a very terse statement that all issues have been resolved, but they didn't go into further detail. Sources that I spoke with off the record said that the special counsel exaggerated the findings and that there was no violation of NEPA. And you do have to take into account the Southern Utes' pretty renowned environmental record. They're generally considered very good stewards of the land around here.
The Southern Utes are a sovereign nation. Do they have to abide by NEPA?
They do have to abide by NEPA. And actually, in past years, they are credited with requesting that the government, that they go further with NEPA in terms of air quality regulations and clean water.
If those irregularities, as you put it, violated NEPA, why was the tribe not held responsible for this?
Yeah, again, we still have a lot of those questions that have not been answered. When you deal with sovereign nations and the privacy that they're entitled to, you do get these lingering questions and sort of confusing details. And the tribe was waiting, you know, 2, sometimes 3 years for, you know, pretty rudimentary things that should take a couple of months. So it seems like they just took it upon themselves to draft those right-of-way easements and kind of all snowballed into this pretty confusing situation.
Well, Jonathan Romeo of the Durango Herald, thanks very much for talking with me today, and thanks for your work.
Yeah, thank you.
We will link to Durango Herald reporter Jonathan Romeo's article at kdnk.org. Children as young as 4 or 5 recognize signals of bias among adults, according to new research from the University of Washington. This suggests that even unconscious mannerisms can filter down to kids.
To adults, it's sometimes unclear how much goes over kids' heads and how much they're absorbing. According to research from the University of Washington, children as young as 4 could be picking up nonverbal social biases from adults. Allison Skinner, lead author of the research, says this study was meant to go further than others that had already shown kids adopt biases from their parents.
This is one of the first steps to talk more about how kids are actually picking it up from the culture, how they're absorbing it.
Researchers took a group of 4- and 5-year-olds and showed them 2 videos. An actor greeted 2 women with an action, such as giving one of them a toy. In the first, the actor spoke in a positive manner, smiling and speaking in a warm tone. In the second, the actor scowled and spoke gruffly. 2/3 of the children favor the recipient of the positive signals. Researchers then took the study a step further. They added friends with shirts the same color to the two women who had received the positive and negative signals. They found that children's preferences and biases extended beyond individuals to members of groups. 4 out of 5 children preferred the friends of the woman who received positive signals. Skinner explains the research mirrors what kids most likely experience in daily life and says parents may need to check even their innermost feelings if they don't want to pass on their own biases.
To really be aware that, oh, I'm interacting with someone of another group, perhaps a group that my child doesn't have very much exposure to. So I need to be really aware of how I'm behaving and how much I'm giving them eye contact and all these various things and making sure that I'm giving a positive message.
Skinner says parents who have diverse groups of friends also may be shaping kids to be inclusive of people who are different from them. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
Pipeline construction in Battlement Mesa begins this week after Garfield County commissioners discussed the pipeline's transition to new ownership Tuesday, reports the Post-Independent. The county issued a pipeline development permit in October for URSA, but Summit Midstream has taken over. Commissioners Tuesday wanted to make sure all rules and regulations that were agreed upon with URSA carry over to Midstream. The board also wanted to see Midstream operations and mitigation plans, a new revegetation bond to replace the one provided by URSA, and Midstream's emergency response and emergency action plans. Summit Midstream will begin the bore of the pipeline this week and the welding and stringing of the pipe over the next several weeks. The company expects to be working on pipeline construction for D-PAD before spring.